There were various ways he did that, besides being versed in Greek and discussing issues with Greek philosophers. He also grew a beard. He's the first Roman to do so. The Romans were always clean-shaven, never the pragmatic ones. The Romans didn't want anything for an opponent to tug on when they're fighting with their sword, so they always had this, you know, crew cut, military cut, for practical reasons. And Hadrian put on the beard of a philosopher, his well-trimmed beard, and set the rage. Thereafter, Romans all wear beards. He also was brought up in the household of the previous emperor, Trajan, a relative who adopted him as emperor, who was related to Trajan through his Trajan's wife. It's an old Roman Spanish family. And Hadrian was brought up in this household of probably very stern Spanish matrons. He had a very loveless marriage with his wife, Sabina, who, by all accounts, hated her husband. And Hadrian found consolation in taking a male lover, Antinous, which was perfectly respectable in certain Greek circles. This was looked upon as Greek, as Hellenic. It was the antithesis. Hadrian was very good about this. He didn't parade it around as Nero. Nonetheless, it was one of a number of ways as he was seen as unpopular. He also traveled extensively through the Roman world. Hadrian probably knew the Roman Empire better than any emperor before or since. He traveled two-thirds of his reign, he was outside of Italy. And again, this caused resentment in the Roman ruling classes. And Hadrian, with a very strange mix of pragmatism and this sentimental Hellenism, really proved to be one of the great builders and patrons of the cities of Asia Minor. For instance, he rebuilt the cities of Nicaea and Nicomedia, which suffered a horrendous earthquake in 123 AD or 121 AD, early in the 120s. And Hadrian ordered the reconstruction of it. Hadrian endowed shrines. He set up this outfit known as the Panhellenion, which I'll be discussing in the next lecture, which grouped all the great shrines and cities of ancient Greece together in an empire-wide religious league. He gave an enormous number of benefits to the city of Athens. He actually presided as the chief archon or magistrate of Athens for a year. And there's a whole set of later Roman emperors that do the same. And he really did enjoy, I think, playing the role of a Philhellene, far more than the role of a Roman emperor. Anyway, the Greeks were understanding about his affection for Antinous. And when Antinous drowned under mysterious circumstances on his Nile cruise, one of the stories is that he was sacrificed because Hadrian was interested in the black arts, and that's a story that's put out. Another was that it was accidental. But whatever the reasons for Antinous' death, he ordered Antinous to be worshipped as a hero, and the cities of Asia Minor and Greece responded, and we have an extensive series of coins commemorative of the young Antinous, as well as shrines that went up to this new Hellenic god. This, of course, excited nothing but denunciation and jeers in Rome. But what Hadrian's reign represents in the wider picture is that the relationship has now changed. The emperor is going and giving all these benefits to cities and sanctuaries, and it's a recognition of how much these cities had achieved, that they had recovered, that all of the institutions put in by Augustus had succeeded, and the cities with Hadrian begin to prosper. Furthermore, there is a significant change in the relationship. Some of the great families, particularly from Asia Minor, in the Greek East, now seek Roman service. Some of them become equestrians, others become senators. We have the beginnings of the movement of provincials from the East into the upper echelons of Roman power. And by the end of the second century, within two generations of Hadrian's death, by one reckoning, perhaps a third of the Roman Senate in the city of Rome were of families that, at least in part, were of the great Anatolian or Greek families who had taken imperial service starting in the reigns of Trajan and Hadrian. And that's an important point to make, that the Greek cities have not only recovered, but at least part of the Greek ruling classes are now willing to accept the notion that they can serve the Roman emperor and still retain their Hellenic identity. The third emperor I would like to mention in this development is the Emperor Septimius Severus, one of my favorite emperors, a man who in many ways is responsible for getting me involved in studying Roman history, or more likely his wife, Julia Domna, who is the most brilliant of Roman empresses in my mind. And as one student once put it on an examination, the love of Professor Harl's life, but history shafted him by having him live in different periods.